Anyway, thank you so much. Thank you for having me. I always love coming here, you know, even though I thought I was in the wrong place today because it didn't look like LMS that I was used to. But I love that there's such a community, you know, achdus going on here. Like, you come and everybody participates, and, you know, the different shuls and the different schools, and, you know, to get the women together from different communities or different shuls and learn together. So it's always so nice to see, you know, community working together. You don't often see that in New York. So it's nice to come. And we're not so far. And I got in the car. It wasn't that long ago. But so thank you for having me. I always mention when I come here, you know, I love coming to Philly also. I feel like I'm coming back to my roots. My mom's from Philadelphia. She grew up in West Philly, which used to be like a Jewish area, I guess. I'm not sure it is now. And in fact, she always gets such a kick out of the fact when I come here, you know, she's like, Bella Kinwood, like, I hung out there, I had friends there. She went to Temple and Girls High. And I think Girls High was called, and school programs here. Letha Schwartz, now Levine. She was a music major. She didn't grow up from, but she was, my grandparents were very traditional and part of the traditional Jewish community here. But and then my dad went to Jefferson Medical School, and that's where they met. They met when they were here. And, you know, my kids are Philly fans, Eagles fans. And, you know, I feel bad for them. Like, you know, I was a Philly fan in the 80s. Like, they actually were good. And but you know, it's hard in New York when everybody's Yankee fans around you. And Yisrael Cohen was the other Philly fan in his class, so they had each other. So I always like coming back to Philadelphia, and you know, I do feel like I'm coming back to my roots. My grandparents are buried here, and sometimes I try on the way back to go visit the Beis Hakfaro. So it's always nice to come here and give a shiur. And I also love seeing that, you know, people come out on women coming out on a Sunday morning, you know, to learn a little bit. And particularly, this is the first year I'm doing Nisan. I'm doing like a pre-Pesach shiur, and this is even to me. I love, you know, when I give shiurim like around Pesach time, where people are interested in shiurim before Pesach, and I'll tell you why. Because, you know, there's not that many more Sundays before Pesach, and you're all here. And kol hakavod, you know, this is like maybe two more after this. I don't want to remind you, but we just met Rosh Chodesh. So, you know, that's the, you know, Birchat HaChodesh for the first Chodesh Nisan. But I feel very strongly about this, and I obviously you do too, because you're all here. You know, when we were going back and forth, and thank you, Nancy, for all the back and forth. Nancy did a lot of legwork, you know, in touch with me all along. But I love, you know, wherever you look, you know, everybody's busy with Pesach. And, you know, there's a lot of anxiety that goes along with it. Every women's Jewish magazine is dealing with, you know, the anxiety that goes along with Pesach. And everybody's shopping, how many trips to the store you're making, and cleaning, and shopping and cleaning. And, you know, all the hours that we spend preparing for this week of Pesach. And I feel very strongly that part of preparation should be learning also. In other words, why is it just physical preparation that goes into the preparation for Pesach, when there should be spiritual preparation also? You shouldn't show up at the Seder, you know, without having, you know, read about or listened to a shiur or learned about something new, when this is such an important chag. So I think the preparation that goes into Pesach should be spiritual as well. And it's true, there's going to be a lot more physical. But even, you know, when you're cleaning, or, you know, if you could listen to a shiur, or spend some time at night, you know, in quiet moments, you know, reading through something, or coming one of the precious Sunday mornings before Pesach, coming for an hour and preparing yourself spiritually for this very important chag, kol hakavod. And I think it's very important, because sometimes people lose sight of that. So on that note, let's, you know, I figured we'll obviously talk about Pesach and some nice ideas that we can share, you know, going into Pesach, and that we can have an opportunity to share in our Pesach Siddurim. And, you know, again, just, you know, spend some time thinking about why we're doing all this. You know, that it's not just a spring cleaning, a crazy spring cleaning. I mean, if you think about it, it's insane. It's 7 days, and what we do for 7 days, you know, clearly, like, you know, it was men run. It's one of those things in Judaism. Now, you know, clearly rabbis involved, and the women weren't involved in this decision about what's going on here. So we have to stop and say, why are we doing all this? So Pesach is really, you know, if you think about it, it's really the holiday of Jewish identity. And, you know, even, like, it's always interesting to me that You know, wherever you go, I wouldn't say necessarily the world, maybe the world also, but certainly in this country, you know, even the most unaffiliated Jews, I feel like, get that box of matzah. You know, maybe sometimes free if you spend enough in ShopRite. I don't know if you have those deals here. Do you have that in Philadelphia? You get your 5 pounds of matzah if you spend a certain amount of money, right? But, you know, you have, there's something about Pesach, the holiday of Passover, that's really the holiday of Jewish identity. And the question is why? You know, are we just celebrating our historical, you know, freedom from slavery? And obviously it's not just that. In fact, once when I was in my stages that I didn't know what I wanted to be when I grew up, but I knew I didn't want to be a teacher. So anyway, I always tell my students, like, if you think you know what you want to do or you're not sure and you're getting anxious about it, the only thing I knew I didn't want to be was a teacher. So, you know, you never know. So I got a master's in journalism and I was working for Jewish Telegraph. It was a 1-year master's, so I didn't have to decide what I wanted to do. And I was working in Jewish Telegraphic Agency, JTA, which is like the Jewish Associated Press. I would tell people I worked for the JAP, and they're like, oh, which one? So they sent me on this, it was like before Pesach, and they sent me to Boston to cover a bunch of different stories. And while I was there, one of the stories they wanted me to cover was there had been some anti-Semitic, there had been some problems with the Black community and the Jewish community at that point. So they were doing this big interfaith seder in this big, you know, Reform temple in Boston. And right outside of Boston. So I went to this thing, and it was a lot of fun. It was really a lot of fun, and it was like the Black and Jewish communities coming together, and it was fun because it was this, you know, Black gospel choir. That was the highlight. And they got up, and they sang, you know, when Moses went down to Pharaoh, let my people go. And I was like, you know, let him go. Everybody said, it was so much fun, and I'm on the chair screaming. I didn't know anybody there, so it didn't matter. But it was really fun. Like, you know, everybody said, let him go. And I realized I had a lot of fun, and I interviewed a lot of people, and I met a lot of interesting people. But I realized afterwards, you know, like I was on my way home, and I'm sitting in the car, and I'm like, "That's so interesting. We had this whole really nice interfaith seder, and the theme was, you know, you were slaves, we were slaves, you were free, we were free, and we're all like celebrating our freedom together." And I was realizing there was no mention of God. There was not one mention of God. It was like, you know, we're celebrating our freedom. But, like, God was not in the picture. There was no mention of anything other than we were free from slavery. And obviously, that's not the point of Pesach. And that's why it's also interesting. It's so nice that you have these unaffiliated Jews who are buying their, you know, box of matzah and celebrating freedom and the holiday of freedom. But really, it's a little bit ironic because really, it's not just that we're celebrating our freedom from slavery. We're celebrating our relationship with Hashem. And the fact that Hashem took us out of that slavery, and the fact that where would we be without Him, and the fact that He is part of our everyday lives, and that's the relationship we're celebrating. We're using that experience of being slaves in Egypt, of being freed, as the starting point where that relationship all began and then blossomed. But that's really what we're celebrating. So that's what I want to talk to you about this morning. You know, different aspects of Pesach and where we see through the ritual. Where did it start? Where did this relationship start? And what do we have? You know, how do the rituals show and help us in that, you know, focus on that relationship with Hashem? So I started, I figured we'll start from the beginning. Really, the whole story begins in Bereshit, but it continues, well, you'll see what the Netziv says, in Sefer Shemot, you know, when Bnei Israel were in Mitzrayim, and they became slaves, and then the redemption followed. So I have here, and don't get nervous, I always give a lot of sources, I always give more than I end up using, just so, you know, in case we have more time, which we usually don't, but, you know, I always like to have more, and we don't go through everything. I give you the whole thing because I want you to see the context of it, but we only usually do a little piece of it. The Netziv, Rav Naftali Tzvi Yehuda Berlin, he was the Rosh Hashiva of the Volozhin Yeshiva in the early 19th century. He writes a great perush on tremendous person and really contributed a lot. I think one of his greatest contributions is his perush on Torah. It's called Ha'imek Davar. His perush Ha'imek Davar, it's on Chamisha Chumshei Torah. And Ha'imek Davar means like the deep word, and he's very philosophical in his parish. And one of my favorite part of his parish is his introductions. Every sefer, he has an introduction to every sefer, and it's so compelling, his introductions, and so profound, and really explains what the whole point of the sefer is. Next time I come, maybe we'll do something on Bereshit, because that's really my favorite one, his introduction to Bereshit. But anyway, we're focusing on Shemot now, and what he does is, his style is that he talks about how he gives another name for the Sefer, and then he tells you why it's called by that name. So he does, and then that's his whole introduction, and that fits into the theme of the Sefer. So with Sefer Shmuel, he does the same thing. And he says, you know, this book, Zeha Sefer Nikra Befi Ba'alei Midrash, and I always give out sources also. You could just, you know, first of all, it keeps you focused. Second of all, you know I'm not making this stuff up. Well, I guess I could have made it up, but no, I'm not that good. And if you want to follow, I always speak to audiences, you know, different levels of learning and sources and everything like that. So either you can follow, you cannot follow, you don't have to, but it's you have it in front of you. Zeha Sefer Nikra Befi Ba'alei Midrash Sefer Shmuel. This book is called the Book of Shmuel. Come on, I'm skipping around a little bit. It's called the Book of Shmot. And then he quotes Zulat, except for, and some people call it, he quotes the Ramban, calls it Sefer Geulah, the Book of Redemption, which we'll see next. Zulat Rabbeinu Bahag. But the Baal Halachot Gdolot, the Sof Sifra Kodesh, Yikra'enu Sefer Sheini, the Chamisha Chumshe Torah. So that the Nitziv says, he quotes this Bahag, and he says he calls it Sefer Sheini, the second book. And he says, what are the five names of the Torah? The five books of the Torah, Sefer Breshit, Chumash Sheni, Sefer Kohanim, Chumash HaPigudim, Mishneh Torah. And then he says, it teaches us something. And these are the five books, and the second one is called, Shmot is called the second book. And he continues, he says, Shalom Bechinam Shina Hashem Bazeh HaSefer. It's not for no reason that he's calling it by this name. V'haya l'Rabbeinu likro kulam b'mispar Chumash Sheni or Shlishi, or Chumash Shmot, or Alinyan Misuyam Shebo Kmo Yitzi Mitzrayim U'Matan Torah. He says, the question is, it doesn't make sense that he's calling this the second book. If he was calling Breishi Sefer Rishon, and the book of Vayikra Sefer Shlishi, so it makes sense, because they're all numerical, first, second, third, fourth, fifth. But if he's calling them all by names of events that happened, based on events that happened in the book, like Sefer Breishit, you know, is Sefer HaBriya, the book of creation, because that's what happened in the book. You know, Sefer Pikudim is the book of Bamidbar, it's a book of numbers, because that's, you know, there are two times that B'nai Israel counted in that book. So then, take something that happened in Sefer Shmot and qualify that name. There's so many great things that happened in Shmot. Sefer Matan Torah, Sefer Yitzhak Mitzrayim. But to call every other Sefer by the name of something that happened and then call Sefer Shmot, Sefer Sheni, doesn't seem to make sense. So why would we do that? And here's the underlying. He says, Ela ba'lalam deinu, dezeh ha-sefer bi'yichud, hu sheni le-sefer reishit ha-briya, ki hu chelek sheni mizeh ha-sefer. He says, thematically, the essence of the Sefer is that it's book number two. That's thematically what it is. We're not just talking numerical, because the other books are not numerically named, right, titled. But here, it's called Sefer Sheni, because thematically, it's Sefer Breishit part two. It's the second part of Sefer Breishit. And then he continues, we're not going to go through the whole thing, but maybe one or two more lines. Hainu bo nigmar seder habriya. Because creation that began in the beginning of Breishit is completed in Sefer Shmot. We know the world was created for the sake of Bnei Israel because Hashem wanted to ensure that there would be Torah in this world, and Bnei Israel are the ones who embrace the values of Torah and make sure that that exists. We're a source of blessing to the world through the values of Torah, and that's why the world was created. The purpose of the world is to have Torah in it and to have Bnei Israel, you know, the ones that are taking this Torah, bring this Torah into the world. And that didn't end until, it doesn't end at the end of Breishit. It ends when they get to their point and that they fulfill the purpose of their creation. When they're at the point that they have the Torah and can now go into the world and fulfill their purpose. Our purpose in the world is to be a light among nations. Our purpose in the world is to bring the values of Torah into the world. That didn't happen at the end of Breishit because they didn't have the Torah yet. So that's what the Nitziv says, that thematically, this book is Breishit part two. And he explains further, we're not going to read the rest of it inside, but he says how, you know, Breishit part one is the physical creation. All the physical elements go into, you know, the birth of a nation. We talk about Shmot, the birth of a nation, but it really started in Breishit with the birth of Abraham and Lech Lecha and all the individuals that, you know, really are introduced in Breishit, that they are the ones who start the Jewish people. And then comes along Sefer Shmot. And Sefer Shmot is now, you know, now the spiritual part. It's true, the nation physically is born there also, because really at the end of Breishit, Bnei Israel are really just that, literally B'nai Yisrael, the children of Yisrael, who is Yaakov. There's no nation. There's no cohesive nation. You have all the individuals that made up this nation, but the nation is formed really in Sefer Shemot. But in Sefer Shemot, you have now the spiritual part of this nation, the part that has to do with the relationship with God. Because remember, the individuals of Bereishit had amazing relationships with God, but there wasn't a group of people who had a relationship with God, a group of Jewish people. That only happens in Shemot. And that's why Sefer Shemot is really Sefer Sheni, let's say Sefer Bereishit. It's Sefer Bereishit part two. And just as an aside, you know, you can ask them the Netziv, okay, so then really Shemot should have ended after Matan Torah, because that's when they got the Torah, and that's when, you know, that's when they had a relationship with Hashem. And if you think about it, and the Rav Hirsch, you know, mentioned this, make little reference to it, but I'm just going to elaborate on it a little bit. I think that it doesn't end at Matan Torah. You need the rest of Sefer Shemot. We'll see the Ramban talks about the Mishkan also. What comes after Matan Torah? The Mishkan, the building of the Mishkan. And that's when the Ramban says that relationship was solidified. But even, you know, according to the Netziv, after Matan Torah, the relationship was not solidified. It was not great. I mean, right after Matan Torah, B'nai Yisrael already, like, having an affair, you know? They just had this marriage with God, and they did Chet HaEgel, they did the sin of the golden calf. And, you know, I always think about it as the relationship can't really be solidified until they have a first fight. You know, if you think about a relationship, and it really makes sense. Like, think about it. You know, I have students that talk to me a lot about dating. Just recently had a student, she called me up, and she's like, you know, I've been dating this guy, and I've been in touch with her a little, and she says, I'm like, how's it going? And she's like, it's amazing. It's such a great relationship. We've never even had a fight. I'm like, how long have you been going yet? She's like, about 6 months. I'm like, okay, that's a red flag for me. You know, like, let's have this conversation. Are you not being who you are? Are you not being true to yourself? Are you not expressing your opinion? Are you, you know, it might be good. Maybe I'm just, you know, I'm married to a psychologist, you know, like, I'm super sensitive about these things. But I don't think that a good relationship is not about not having a fight. It's about how to have an argument, you know, how to have an argument and how to recover from that argument. And I think that's very important. And that's why, to me, you know, for 6 months, you're going, yeah, you've never had it. I said, was there, maybe we're just using different language. A fight, don't call it a fight, that's a little, you know, a little negative. Did you ever have a disagreement? No, we agree about everything. I'm like, okay, there goes my red flags. So, anyway, I'm meeting her this week, so. But I hope it's good. But I'm saying, you know, that's not, to me, that doesn't say that it's a good relationship. I want to hear that you're able to express your opinion, you've had disagreements, and, you know, you're able to recover from those disagreements. So I see that as B'nai Israel also in after Chet HaEgel, right? So they have their first fight with Hashem, it's a big fight, right? Hashem was ready to get rid of them. Luckily they had a good lawyer. That was Moshe. And didn't even charge them much. And pro bono stuff, right? And then they recover. And they recover, and that relationship becomes so much stronger through the building of the Mishkan. And that's why Sefer Shemot ends with the building of the Mishkan, and it ends with, you know, that the Shekhinah of Hashem was, you know, came and dwelled in the Mishkan, and that was like, okay, we're good, we're back, and we're peaceful, we have this peaceful marriage, and we're together now, and that's why Sefer Shemot is really the culmination of, and the fulfillment of the creation of Bereishit. And the Ramban talks about that also in source number two. He calls Sefer Shemot, he calls it Sefer HaGula, and it's very similar themes. He says, Hishlima Katuv Sefer Bereishit Shehu Sefer Yetzirah, right? That Sefer Bereishit ends, which is creation of the world. And he talks about the Avos and, you know, Maaseh Avot Siman Levanim, all the things that are going to happen are hinted at in Bereishit through the individuals of Bereishit. And then he says, Bachareish, the second line at the end, Bachareish Hishlim HaYetzirah, third line now, Yitzchil Sefer Acher B'inyan HaMaseh Haba Min HaRamazim HaHem. All the things that actually, the fulfillment of everything that was promised, that was going to happen, that was promised to Bereishit, V'nityached Sefer Ve'el HaShmo B'inyan HaGalut HaRishon HaNigzar B'Feirush U'B'Geula Mimenu. And now, everything that was, you know, Avram was told there were going to be slaves in Bereishit, now it all happens in Shemot and the subsequent redemption. And then he talks about how this is the, you know, this is the book of redemption. He says that's why Belachin Chazar Veitchil B'Shmot Yordei Mitzrayim U'Mispharam, and he says that's why the beginning of Shemot repeats what we learned at the end of Bereishit, the people who came down to Mitzrayim, Afal Pi Shekvar Nichtav Bazeh, you know, Bazeh, even though it was already mentioned, Ba'avur Ki Yiridatam Sham Hu Reishit HaGalut. right? Kimi Asulchal, because this is the book of redemption. If this is Sefer Gula, we have to start at the very beginning. It's a very good place to start. And we have to start at the beginning and end at the end. And the beginning is when they came down to Mitzrayim. And that's why we can't just take it for granted that we already saw, you know, knew that in Breishit. So, V'hine ha-galut einenu nishlam ad yom shuvam el makomam. Same idea. But galut, again, if this is a book of redemption, and it was just physical redemption, like we said, just slavery from freedom from slavery, then the book would have ended at the beginning of B'Shalach, right? They leave. But, I mean, they're leaving in the fourth parsha. You have Shemot, they become slaves. Va'era and Bo, they are, you know, the process of their gula begins with Hashem sending the makos, and then they leave in the beginning of B'Shalach. So obviously there's more to the story. It doesn't just end there, and that's what the Ramban's point is. So if this whole book is the book of redemption, it has to start from the very beginning, which is the physical slavery, and it has to end at the very end, which is not just the physical redemption, but the spiritual redemption. And that's why after the physical redemption, he's like, it doesn't end until they're back to a place, they're at a place where they have a relationship with their God, with the spiritual part of all this. And that doesn't happen until Har Sinai, and it doesn't even, like we said about the fight, it doesn't even end there. Ve'asu ha-mishkan, ve'shav ha-kadosh baruch hu, ve'yishrash chidetz ha-bedehem. And it ends when they build the mishkan, and God's, you know, presence is now with them, and they're living in unity, they have shalom bayit, and the last line, v'lachein nishlam ha-sefer hazeh ve'hashlimo inan ha-mishkan, v'be'ot kvod Hashem maleot tamid. And that's why it ends, the very end of Sefer Shemot, the Sefer Shemot ends with Hashem Shechina dwelling, that we just read it, Vayachav Kudeh, this past, yesterday, kvod Hashem maleot ha-mishkan, right? It's a beautiful ending to a very, you know, up and down period of time with the, you know, in the relationship with Hashem, that Hashem is now dwelling in their midst, where it ends on such a high. We have this mishkan. This is going to connect us to God. Vayikra comes along now. We're starting Vayikra, which is, you know, I love how Menachem Litaik from Gush Etzion, he calls it the Vayikra, the how-to manual. How to now use, it's true though, that, you know, we just built this amazing mishkan, which is going to bring us close to Hashem. Well, how do we do that? You know, and it's the how-to manual that comes along with the building of the instruction manual. What do we do now? How do we use this thing, you know, to bring us closer to Hashem? But that's what the mishkan is, and that's why it ends there. So again, so my point, that was sort of an introduction, don't worry, everything won't take as long, but it's an important introduction, because the point is that our relation, that this, we're celebrating now that not just our physical redemption, but our spiritual redemption. So we know now where it ended. It ended with the building of the mishkan. I mean, I shouldn't say it ended. It's still a process. It's always a process, right? But in terms of that redemption, the physical redemption ended when they left Egypt. The spiritual redemption ended when they, after they got the Torah, and now they're unified with Hashem, and kvod Hashem alei et ha-mishkan. So the spiritual, so where does the spiritual redemption start in this whole process? Does it start at Har Sinai when they get to Har Sinai? The answer is no. It really starts when they're in Mitzrayim. And it starts in Parshat Bo. Parak Yavet in Parshat Bo. And if you look at source number 3, I didn't bring the beginning of the parak, but I'll tell you how the beginning of the parak, how the parak begins. The first pasuk is a famous pasuk that begins with Vayi ha-chodesh ha-zelacha rosh chodeshi. Right? The mitzvah of Rosh Chodesh. Hashem says to Moshe, tell B'nai Israel the following. I need them to establish the Rosh Chodesh. I want them, you know, I need them. Technically, this is going to be an important month. This next month that's coming is the month of Nisan. The redemption is going to happen in Nisan. So they need to know when this month starts, and I want them to mark it. But it's more than that. It's more than marking it so that they know when is the 10th day, because they're going to have to take that sheep, and when is the 14th day, which is they're going to have to slaughter it that night, and when is the 15th, because they have to leave. It's much more than that. It's basically Hashem saying to Moshe, tell B'nai Israel, you know, I am their God. And again, Hashem introduced himself. I should take it even a step back. The beginning of the era, Hashem tells Moshe, this is right after Moshe is introduced to Hashem at the burning bush, at the snet in Shemot. And then Hashem says, I want you to go to Mitzrayim, and I want you to save B'nai Israel, you know, bring B'nai Israel out of Mitzrayim. And the beginning of Ha'era, he tells Moshe, tell B'nai Israel, go to gather them go get the Zikanim in Mitzrayim, go to them. He's already, by the way, gone to Paro and got kicked out of there. It didn't go well, the first meeting with Paro. None of the meetings with Paro actually went well. And then Hashem tells B'nai Israel, and B'nai Israel are feeling very demoralized. You know, you made it worse for us here, right? And Hashem says, okay, in the beginning of Ha'ira, I want you to tell B'nai Israel the following. And he gives us this magnificent speech. I really think, like, I teach you know, I've taught all Chamisha Chumshe Torah many times. It's one of my favorite speeches. I would say it's my top three. I don't want to say it's my favorite. Maybe, it might be. But I just remember when my son Yoni was born, my oldest, and I called my father at the office to tell him that I had a baby, and he called me back 5 minutes later, and he's like, did you check when his bar mitzvah is? And I'm like, oh, I gave birth 7 minutes ago. I didn't check. So, he doesn't with each one of my kids, by the way. And this one, actually, my one, I have a bar mitzvah coming up. It's actually his bar mitzvah. So you got even more excited. But I'm like, I always count on him. He tells me right away. I know exactly when the bar mitzvah is. So this one, he told me, it's Parshas Vayera, put it on your calendar, put it on your calendar. And I'm like, and I remember sitting there in the hospital, like, people were meeting, going, oh, I love Vayera. I know what I'm going to say in his bar mitzvah 13 years before. And I did, by the way. I said to his mortification, none of the mothers speak, am I, you know, bar mitzvahs. I'm like, sorry, this one does. And, and you know, because it's such a great speech. He says to, Moshe tells B'nai Israel, you know, it's basically, it spans Jewish history, past present. He's basically saying to B'nai Israel, you don't know about this God, but he's been there for you. You know, you right now, you're about to be born as a nation, and you don't even know that you're part of something much bigger than yourself. It's a great bar mitzvah speech, right? Like a baby's born into the world, and like you look at this baby, and the baby has, God willing, if it's a nice, you know, it's a family situation where there's a family that's welcoming this child and actually wants this child, and, you know, there's cousins and there's grandparents, and you look at this baby and you're like, I remember thinking that with my kids, like my own kids, like, you don't know how lucky you are, like you have, you know, the grandparents who can't wait to meet you and love you to pieces unconditionally, you know, and you're born into this, you're part of something much bigger than yourself, and you don't even know that yet. You know, hopefully you'll come to see it as you get older. You have these cousins that can't wait to meet you, and aunts and uncles that already adore you, even though you have no personality and you're just a blob right now, you know? But I'm saying that's, you know, so that's really, if you think about it, that's you know, my brother's a fertility specialist, and he went into fertility, the field of fertility, because he was working, he did his training at Einstein as an OB, and he was working in Montefiore there in some of the hospitals in the South Bronx, and he's like, it was so depressing to bring a baby into the world that wasn't wanted. You know, he would like hand the baby over to sometimes like a crack addicted mother whose father's not in the picture at all. I'm like, what? This is so sad, you know? So he decided to go to a field which also has its ups and downs, but at least you're in a field where people, he's bringing a child into the world that's wanted. It's interesting. It was an interesting. But anyway, so, you know, hopefully, you know, the baby's wanted and surrounded by love. And that's the message that Moshe's giving B'nai Israel. You don't even know this, that you're part of it. You have history. You have Avram, Yitzhak, and Yaakov. You have great grandparents who had, you know, couldn't wait for you to be born, this nation to be born. And he goes, you know, and he's saying, you know, you have, you're really part of something much bigger than yourselves, and soon you're going to know that. And it's so sad because at the end of this magnificent speech, it's, by the way, it's a famous speech because that's where the Avra Lishonah Geula come in. If you want to take a look at something before Pesach, the Hotseiti, Beitzalti, Begalti, Belakati, why we drink four cups of wine, be part of the Seder, is from that speech. You know, Hashem is saying to him in the speech, this is what's going to happen now. I'm going to take you out of Mitzrayim, Behotseiti, Behitzalti, I'm going to save you, Vegaalti, I'm going to redeem you, Behitzalti, I'm going to save you, which is partly physical, partly spiritual, then Vegaalti, which is all spiritual. And that's, Behibeti, I'm going to bring you to Arthel, you know, Kos Eliyahu. And, but B'nai Israel couldn't even hear him. At the end of that magnificent speech, it's so powerful from a psychological perspective, it says, V'lo shamu el Moshe mikotzer roch mevadak hashah. They couldn't even hear him because they were so miserable. They were in such a bad place. I mean, you know, I think about this a lot with a husband who's a therapist. You know, sometimes, like, you can go to the best therapist in the world, you know, but if the person is not in a place to be able to hear whatever pearls of wisdom, or if they're not medicated to enable them to hear that, then it's, what good is it, you know? They say, how many psychologists does it take to change a light bulb? You know that joke, right? Just one, but the light bulb has to want to change. And it's true. It's true. But, you know, meaning, like, you have to be in a place that you can hear it. If you're too depressed, then you can't hear it, so it's not going to be helpful to you. So B'nai Israel couldn't hear it. So that's why Hashem says, okay, fine. I'm just going to show them. I'll show them. I'm going to do anything for them. And that's what happens. From that point on, Hashem starts with the Makos. And he's fighting their battle. And he's taking on the Egyptians. And for 9 months, every Makos took 1 month. It was 3 weeks of warnings and then 1 week of plague. Okay? So for 9 months, Hashem is showing to them what I'm doing for you. I'm protecting you. I'm separating you out from the Mitzrayim. They're going to get the plague. You're going to be safe. You could drink from the same cup of water, and yours will be water, and theirs will be blood. You'll see that I have your back. And that's what happens for 9 months. And then after the ninth plague, Hashem says, you know what? I'm ready to take you out. If this is all about the relationship, a relationship can't just be give, 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 and the other person take, 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 which is what it's been. I need a little bit from you. Not a lot, But I need you now that hopefully I've proven myself after 9 months, I need you to show me, to prove to me that you're dedicated to me. You're in this. You're taking this seriously. That you're committed to me also. So I need something from you. I need you to start doing some mitzvot. I need you to do a little bit of sacrifice on your part so that, you know, we can solidify this relationship. And that's what the Karban Pesach is. And that's what happens at the beginning of Parak Yudet. That Hashem says, and he starts with Rosh Chodesh. And he says, I want you to, you know, I want you to mark the first day of the month. That's number one. That's step number one. That's how to start. Judaism is all about reflecting on the passage of time. It's not just enough to reflect once a year in Yom Kippur and look past on the year and see how good it was, how can we make it better. We do this, you know, we do it once a month with Rosh Chodesh, like a mini Yom Kippur once a month. We do it every Shabbos also, every week. It's about stopping and reflecting, and that's what I want you to do with Rosh Chodesh. And then what I want you to do is, and by the way, that's the first mitzvah given to the Jewish people, which is very significant, and you know, I feel like if you've gone to girls' schools, you learn at some point that Rosh Chodesh is special to women, that Hashem gave the mitzvah of Rosh Chodesh, but I'm not sure how that manifests itself, really. I think we work as hard on Rosh Chodesh as we do any other day, but we shouldn't, in theory. I went to a co-ed elementary school, and they used to, 6th, 7th, and 8th grade, they gave the girls donuts on Rosh Chodesh. And I remember the boys felt very bad, but they didn't really care because at that stage you don't want to eat a donut in front of a boy. Anyway, so they gave it to the boys, and they got to eat them. But we knew we were special because we got them to mince donuts on Rosh Chodesh. You know? So, but really, it was given special. This is just a side point. The Gemara says because the women didn't partake in Chet Ha'egel. So you ever wonder? Oh, so that's nice. But what's the connection between not participating in Chet Ha'egel? Because when the men were taking donations for the Egel, it says the pasuk says Beit Parku. They ripped the earrings off their wives' ears because they didn't want to give them over, you know, in their own will. It was grabbed from them. So the Ramban there says, well, maybe they didn't want to give up their jewelry because women love jewelry. We know Ramban says this. He says, we know women love jewelry. Maybe that's a Pasha Kitisa, he says. And that's why they didn't want to give up their jewelry. And then before you're ready to kill the Ramban, you continue. And he says, no, he says, but obviously that's not why, because when they were taking donation for the Mishkan, the women were the first ones to come. The Pasha says, Yavohan Nashim Iman Nashim. So obviously, it's not that they didn't want to donate their gold jewelry for good purpose. They did, but for the Chet Ha'egel, they didn't. So maybe because they didn't partake in Chet Ha'egel, they were the first ones to recognize Hashem and embrace Hashem. Hashem says, "Okay, the very first mitzvah I give to the Jewish people is going to be special to them because they were the first ones. This is the first mitzvah I'm giving to them to connect with me. They were the first ones to accept me. You know, even though I'm this abstract concept, they didn't need that physical manifestation of God that the men did. Anyway." So back to Shemot, and then, okay, so let's move along here. So Hashem says, okay, so this is, you're going to mark Rosh Chodesh, and now I want you to do something important. And I want you to take a sheep, and he says, k'chu lachem tzon. I want you to take for yourselves a sheep, which is also, by the way, interesting, because he's going to give them instructions. I want you to slaughter it, and the fact that it says k'chu lachem, I want you to take for yourselves a sheep. The only other time you have this language of taking for yourself a sheep, it was with Avraham. Hashem said to Avraham, Kechalacha in Bris Ben Havsarim. Again, in the 15th chapter of Bereishit, when Hashem tells Avraham everything that's going to happen in Jewish history, and I think it's one of the most important chapters, because that's where Hashem promises unconditional, eternal survival of the Jewish people, existence of the Jewish people. And he says there, it starts with taking a sheep. So now we're fulfilling what Hashem told Avraham back in Bereishit, but it's not going to work. In other words, zchut avot works, meaning the things that Hashem promised, that you know, the merit of our fathers works when we follow in our father's footsteps, right? Then we get, you know, triple reward or whatever. You know, we don't have to be as good as they are, but we have to have some interest in doing something similar to them. We can't just say to ourselves, oh, we don't have to follow Torah mitzvahs because I have a very holy great-great-grandfather. So, you know, so I can do whatever I want to do, but I'm getting the merit of it. It doesn't work though, right? You know, you have to, like, follow the footsteps of your great-grandfather for schud avot to kick in, and then Hashem gives us the reward for you and for your, you know, the people that came before you. So that's Hashem is saying, I need you to show a little bit of dedication. Obviously not to the extent that Avraham, nobody can show the extent that Avraham did, but a little bit of that dedication. So I want you to take this sheep, I want you to slaughter it, and I want you to take the blood, and I want you to put the blood on the doorposts. And if you look at the underlined pasuk in number 3, "V'hayah adam lachem la'ot al habatim asher atem sham," the blood will be on the door for you. It'll be a sign for you on the doors of the houses that you're going to be in that night. "V'ra'iti et adam u'pasachti alechem," I'm going to see the blood and I'm going to pass over your houses. "V'lo yevachem negef u'mashchit achoto v'eretz Yisrael," and you're not going to be hurt that night. Okay, fine. I'm not going to do the rest because we have to move along here. So if you look at the next source, the Medrash Rabbah, source number 4, says, okay, well, first of all, And one last thing. If you look at the top of this page, it says, when Moshe then told Bnei Yisrael, L'chol Tayyomer Moshe, L'chol Zeknei Yisrael, Vayomer Lehem, Mishchu Ufikhu Lachem Zon. So Moshe gives over the message of Hashem, and he actually adds the word mishchu. Instead of just saying kechu lachem, take for you, he says mishchu kechu, push off. Either mishchu means to push, is it push away or push close? Big discussion. I'm not going into that now. But he adds the word mishchu kechu. You know, push away and take. So the Medrash says the reason Moshe added this word mishchu. He says, "Lachelat Hamotzei," source number 4. "Kashayu b'Mitzrayim, hayu ovdim avodat kochavim. Bnei Yisrael were ovdei avodah zarah in Mitzrayim. The law is ozvim otam. They were really assimilated in Mitzrayim. And this is just, you know, we all assume that they weren't because of that medrash that really doesn't exist. I always offer my students 10 points extra on a final if they could find me the source of that medrash, and they can't because it doesn't exist. That they kept their names and their address and their language. I hate to like blow everyone's bubble, but they didn't." Okay, even the Medrash, there is a Medrash Rabbah that makes reference to, well, maybe they kept these days, it's a maybe, and if they did, they kept their names because it was a Masorah, but they were named after people, and that's why they had those names. It had nothing to do with their commitment to God, or their being different. They were totally assimilated. In fact, the Nitziv says, what's the proof that they were assimilated? On that night of Makkah Bechorah, it says, God passed over the Jewish houses. If they were just living in Goshen still, like they did when Yaakov was around, you wouldn't have to pass over any Jewish houses. You would have just not gone to Goshen. Right? But the fact that they're passing over Jewish houses, Vayifsach, Al Batei HaMitzrayim, Mitzrayim v'Mitzrayim, right? Al Batei B'nei Yisrael v'Mitzrayim. They're clearly living in Egyptian neighborhoods because they're being passed over. So it's an interesting point. And it says, Batei Malei Eretz Otam, they were filling the land. They were really assimilated. Okay? Whatever they kept, they might have kept because of Masorah, because of emotional ties, but they weren't connected at all. I mean, again, another big proof is that they didn't have Bris Milah. We know that when they left Mitzrayim, they had to have Bris Milah before they left Mitzrayim. We talk about the two bloods at the Seder table. And one of them is the blood of Bris Milah. So what does that mean? They were like so connected to their identity, but they didn't have Bris Milah? Like that's the connection to the identity. So anyway, so the Medrash says, so what happens? Amar Lo Kadosh Baruch Hu, second line in source number 4, Lemoshe, Kol Zman Sheyisrael Ovdim Lelohei Mitzrayim Lo Yigalu. As long as they're, you know, still worshiping the Egyptian gods, they're not going to be redeemed. So go tell them, lechemar lahem, they have to get rid of their avodah zarah and change their loyalties. Hadahu dechtiv mishchu kechulachem. Klomar mishchu yidecha meavodat kochavim ukechulachem tzom v'shachatu Eloheihem shalom mitzrim yasu akasa. They worshipped in Egypt, they worshipped sheep. So the best way to show that you are now changing your loyalties from the Egyptian gods to the Jewish God, who has just introduced himself and proven himself for the past 9 months, is by taking that God that you worshipped all these years, slaughtering it for the sake of the new God. That shows that you're changing your loyalties. And that's what God needed them to do. It was a big deal, but that's what he needed them to do. And that's why he says, you know, take this animal, and it's interesting, there were two rituals that apply only to the Jews in Egypt that we don't do now. Pesach we don't do now because we don't have a Beit HaMikdash. But we should. In theory, we should. That didn't just end in Mitzrayim. You know, the slaughtering of the Pesach. Mirtz Hashem, when Beit HaMikdash is rebuilt, we're going to do that again, right? But you'll just be able to buy your sheep online. You know, something will be different. Pick it up on your way in. You know, I'm saying Amazon, 2-day shipping. You have to keep it. We're going to keep it alive for you. No boom, guaranteed. But the point was that we had to take the sheep. And you had to take it on the 10th day. The 10th day, even though they weren't slaughtering it until the eve of the 15th, you had to take it, and for 4 days you had to tie it up in your house, and that was you had to designate it for the sacrifice of the Pesach. That doesn't apply in the future. In the future, you do Karma Pesach, you slaughter it on the eve of the 15th, but you don't have to designate it on the 10th. And the other thing that only applied to them in Mitzrayim is the blood on the doorposts. Nobody has to put blood on, you know, I know the Spartan like to pretend, I always had Sparty envy, that they would walk around the table with the matzah and the walking sticks. I don't think they do the blood thing. You know, I don't think anyone does that, because that's not something that continued. It was only for Bnei Yisrael Mitzrayim. So the Al-Shech in source number 5, he says, well, why did they have to take it on the 10th day in Mitzrayim? It's not something that was Ledorot. What was the whole deal with taking it on the 10th day? I didn't bring Rashi, by the way. Rashi's answer is because that means they're Oseik B'Mitzvah, that every time they checked that sheep in those 4 days, they were racking up the mitzvah, which is what they needed to do. But the only problem with Rashi is, so why the 10th day? They could have done it from Rosh Chodesh. Then they're racking up mitzvahs for 2 weeks, you know? Rashi doesn't really answer that question. The Al-Shech does answer that question. And I threw this in here, again, just some nice ideas. It's fascinating. He says, for technical reasons, they needed to take it on the 10th. Why? Klomar shemalu Yisrael balayla shel shechitat Pesach. We know that they had to have a bris milah. They didn't have bris milah in Mitzrayim, so they had to, before they left, before they did the Karban Pesach and partook in the Karban Pesach, they had to have a bris milah. In fact, you know, nowadays we don't have a Karban Pesach, but in time of Beit HaMikdash, if you couldn't sacrifice the Pesach if you didn't have a bris milah. It's one of the few things that someone who's not circumcised can do. Someone who's not circumcised can keep Torah mitzvahs. I mean, it's just the mitzvah they're not doing, except for Karban Pesach, right? So they needed to be circumcised before. He says that's why they had to take the sheep 4 days early. Why? Because they needed time to be circumcised. Now think, listen to what he says. He says, if they had, because we all assume, you could say this at your seder tables, we all talk about how that night, you know, they had bris milah. He says, oh, they couldn't have had bris milah that night. Because how would they have wobbled, you know, like hobbled out of there at Mitzrayim after having bris milah? All the men had bris milah at different stages in their life. They couldn't have just walked out of there. I mean, you could say, okay, whatever, it's an ace. But come on, you know, like, it's not going to circumcise everyone, have everyone go through this surgery, and then walk out of there. And we know from Avram that it takes like 3 full days, that you're really feeling better on that 4th day since you're circumcised. So he says, that's why they needed to take this animal. Why? Hashem wanted to make sure they were circumcised 4 days earlier. He needed them to be circumcised so that 3 days they would recover, and then the 4th day they could leave. But they couldn't first have a bris milah and then start designating the sheep. They couldn't. Why? Because ki ayan nimtza ha'asei tov kodem hasur meira. We have a concept of sur meira ba'asei tov. If you want to like do tshuva, before you do tshuva, you have to go, you know, you have to have charat on all the past sins that you've done. Before you turn over a new leaf, I guess that's the point of Judah. Before you turn over a new leaf and start afresh, you have to rehash what you did and get past it and do tshuva, because it's sur mirah ba'aseh tov. Get rid of the bad and then you could focus on the good. You have to deal with yourself first before you, you know, turn, you know, change your path or start afresh. And you can't just start afresh and push everything under the rug. You know, the rug's going to be too big. So that's why he says, so if they needed to have bris milah with enough time to recover, so they needed to have bris milah on the 11th day. Because then 11, 12, 13, right, they are recovering. And then the 14th, they can already get ready to leave. And then the 15th, they could leave. I mean, the 14th, they could be busy with Karban Pesach. So if they had to have bris milah by the 11th, they had to take the animal by the 10th. Because they needed to do the sur meirah, taking the animal, designating their old avodah zara now for their new god, was the sur meirah part. We're getting rid of the bad avodah zara. So that's why they had to take that animal, makes sense, on the 10th, and then they could now focus on the Aseh Tov, have bris milah. So it's really because of bris milah they needed to take the animal 4 days before. Anyway, now let's talk about the blood on the doorposts. If you look at the Mechilta, based on the pasuk, it says, Hashem says, you put the blood on the doorpost, and it says, V'haya hadam lachem la'ot, it'll be a sign for you. And then he continues, V'ra'iti et hadam pasachti alechem, and I'll see the blood and I'll pass over the house. So everyone asks, all the mafarshim, who's it a sign for? You know, Bnei Israel or Hashem? And it's clear that from the pasuk, that's a sign for both of them. And then, of course, the question is, well, why? How is it a sign for Hashem? He needs to know which houses are Jewish, because based on where the blood is. So obviously not. So the Mechilta says in number 6, V'ra'iti et hadam, Hayah Rabbi Yishmael Omer, V'halo ha'ko galoy lefanav, right? Don't we know? Hashem knows everything. Why does he need to know where the houses are based on the blood? And obviously that's not what it means. Rather, he says, U'ma tamud lamar v'ra'iti et hadam, Ela bischar mitzvah sha'atem osim, I'm gonna redeem you because of this mitzvah of the blood. Because you did, you know, the blood represents the mitzvah of Karban Pesach. It represents your sacrifice and your demonstration of dedication to me. And therefore, I'm gonna see the blood and I'm gonna save you. I'm gonna pass over your houses. You're gonna be redeemed because of that blood, because of what it represents that you're doing the mitzvah. And then Davar Acher, he continues, V'ra'iti et adam, and this is kind of what we, based on what we said before, V'ra'iti et adam, ro'eh anidam akedato shel Yitzchak. I'm going to see the blood, and remember, it's going to remind me of the blood of the Akedah. What blood of the Akedah?
the blood that Avram almost spilled, that didn't spill, but ended up spilling the blood of the ram that he took in place of his son. So Hashem sees that blood and he's like, oh, finally, now you're showing the sacrifice. Obviously not to the same extent, but he doesn't expect us to. Nobody does that, right? What Avram did. Nobody's willing to do that. But there is some sacrifice here. Your blood of your karban now reminds me of the blood of Avram's karban, which reminds you of what the karban he almost gave me, which was his own son. Finally, you're showing the dedication, you know, signs of the dedication that Avram has, and how I can redeem you. And that's the beginning of the spiritual relationship. If you look at the Cheskuni, and source number 7, Chesuni gives an interesting, you know, psychological answer, not the first one, the second one. He says, "Vahiyad dam lachem la'otz, sha'atem mekayim et ha-mitzvah." Now it's interesting. He says that the blood is a sign for you and Hashem that you're doing the mitzvah. Meaning Hashem sees you doing the mitzvah, but you also see it. That you also see that when you're eating this Korban Pesach, you're looking at the blood, and you know you, the only reason you're doing this is because Hashem told you to. So you're going to be reminded that you're doing the mitzvah. And that's why he says, "Vahiyad dam lachem la'otz." Now it's interesting. He says that Hashem is going to see the blood even though it's on the inside. There's a whole discussion about, you know, you have an inside door and then outside the door. So most everyone across the board says that, except for one or two sources I saw, that the blood was on the inside. We don't think about it like that. When you think of images of Mitzrayim, you think of the blood, everybody seeing it on the outside. Most everyone says no, Bnei Israel needed to see it. They needed to be eating that Korban Pesach and seeing the blood while they're eating it as a reminder of why they're doing what Hashem told them to do this. And then, of course, you know, Hashem doesn't need to see it from the outside. He knows what's going on there. A couple more farshim say, I saw one or two, but overwhelming, and those that say it's on the outside say they needed to be on the outside because of the sacrifice of it, that the Egyptians needed to see it. But most everyone says, you don't see it in the Peshat. The Peshat is, you know, Hayah Adam Lachem Ot. It's a sign for you. So if it's a sign for you, you have to be seeing it. So that's why it's on the inside. But then the psychological answer, which I thought was interesting, the Cheskuni says, he says that another answer for what you're going to see, davar acher, also in the first line, davar acher, le'ot v'zecher sheshachu et dimchem. Maybe it's also a sign for you that you'll see that blood, and you have to remember that they spilled your blood. Shachu et dimchem. Why? Because Bnei Israel could be getting cold feet right now. Because they're going into this unknown desert without food, without water, without any sustenance, you know. And it's, you know, we think about Bnei Israel, oh, they had no emunah. They had a lot of emunah, right? Lechtech acharai b'midbar. Zacharti lachesed nuraiyach, Hashem says, beginning of Yirmiyahu, right? Yirmiyahu is telling Bnei Israel, lechtech acharai b'midbar, be'aretz lo zerah. They follow me blindly into a desert without snacks. I'm thinking of my kids getting in the car with me without snacks. Forget it, you know? Like, you know, no bathrooms and no snacks. Forget it, you know? No GPS. So it was emunah. So you could imagine, though, they were getting scared. Because we know that psychologically, sometimes the unknown is scarier than a known, even, it's always scarier than a known, even if the known is bad. Sometimes we'd rather do a bad known than take a chance and do an unknown because it's scarier to us. So Hashem wanted them to see the blood and remember and not have a selective memory. This is not the time to start with selective. It was bad here. They spilled your blood. You see that blood? It used to be, it was your blood that power was spilling. So don't, you know, if you're getting nervous about it while you're eating the Korban Pesach, look at the blood and remember how bad it was here. But again, it was all about the relationship with Hashem. Rav Hirsch, in source number 8, talks about the drum. I'm not going to read it inside because we don't have time, but he says you could look at it. He says, you know, it's interesting. It had to be on the mezuzot, which are the sides of the door, and the mashkof, which is the top. And it's very specific, the mashkof and the mezuzot. What is that symbolism? A person is very into what everything represents. And, you know, the symbolism behind it. He says that the mashkof, the sides of a door, represent the walls, because that's what holds up the walls, right? Whereas the mashkof is the ceiling. That's what holds up the ceiling. He says every home has walls and a ceiling, and the walls and ceiling are different for different purposes. The ceiling protects you from the elements, you know, from physical. Like you have a ceiling, you have a roof over your head, so you don't get rained on, you know. The walls protect you from the outside cultures, meaning you can whatever you do within the four walls of your home, that expression, you know. You're doing, the whole world could be doing something, but within the walls of your home, you could be doing something else. You know, the whole world is celebrating the turn of the millennium in the year 2000, and we're having a Shabbos meal. I remember that was Friday night, right? Because, and that's what the walls of your home enable you to do. So he says, the fact that, he said, that's why the blood was on the doorposts and the door, what is it called? Jam? I don't know. Mashkof, that's easy to say. So because it was Bnei Israel's way of saying, of Hashem showing Bnei Israel, I'm here for you. I'm part of you. I'm protecting you, the mashkof, but also I'm going to give you a Torah that is going to give you values that's going to protect you from even when the values outside those walls of your home are not necessarily in tune to the values that you should be embracing. So that's, you know, Hashem's, again, the physical and the spiritual, that Hashem is part of, you know, sustaining us both physically and spiritually, and that's what they needed to be reminded of. And that's why you had the doorpost, the blood on the doorpost. The last thing, just to finish up, we're not going to get to do all of these, just a couple more. If you look at source number 9, in Perakit Gimel, so after all these instructions, Moshe says, okay, you have to now remember this forever. These are going to be internal rituals, except for the blood, like we said. And look at Pasuk Gimel, the underlined Pasuk, very strange. He says, Vayomer Moshe El Ha'am, Zachar Et HaYom Hazeh Asher Yatzata Mimitzrayim Mibeit Avadim. Remember this day, and this also obviously applies to us. Remember this day that Hashem took you out of Mitzrayim from the house of slavery. Ki Bechozek Yad Hotzi Hashem Etchem Mizeh. Because God took you out with a strong hand. Velo Yechal Chametz. Right? You're laughing because it's so disjointed, right? I mean, this is a very important pasuk. Remember this day. All these things we're doing are to remember this day. All the crazy work we're going to be doing in the next couple weeks is to remember that day that Hashem took us out with strong hand and don't eat chametz. So what's the connection there? It's, you know, what's the deal with the chametz? You know, why is that even here in this pasuk? And then the continuation, it says, and not only here's ways to remember it, if you look at Pasuk Tet, Vayalach ha'la'ot ayatcha, here the basis of the mitzvah, tefillin and mezuzah, ulezikaron b'inecha lamantia torat Hashem b'ficha, ki b'yad chazaka hotziach Hashem Mitzrayim. And we have all these ways to remember that Hashem took us out b'yad chazaka, and we put it on tefillin shel yad, and tefillin shel rosh, and we put the paragraph of Shema in a mezuzah, because it mentions it's in Mitzrayim. So these are all the ways that we can remember this. And the Rambam in Hilchos Mezuzah talks about why we have the concept of a mezuzah. Why do we have a concept of a mezuzah? He says it reminds us that Hashem is with us. That even as we're going about our day, when you walk into a room, you know, you have to kiss the mezuzah, maybe, maybe not, but you have to think about God when you're walking into a room. Think about the mezuzah or kiss it or whatever you want to do, but it's a way of reminding you as you're going about your daily life. You know, because we're always walking into places, you know, hopefully not into walls, but walking into rooms and walking into buildings, and hopefully, you know, not every place is going to have a mezuzah, but at least the ones that you're able to put up a mezuzah, it reminds you when you're running into your office and then you're running out because you have a meeting, it makes you think about God for a second. That fact that He's part of our lives. And again, that's what we're celebrating, that Hashem is part of our lives. And why is, what's in a mezuzah? The mention of Yetziat Mitzrayim. Because that's where it started. That's where the relationship started. And that's why he says, again, I don't have time to do all of these inside, but he says the mitzvah of tefillin and mezuzah, they're constant reminders of Hashem in our physical lives. And that's why, you know, and that's why Mitzrayim is mentioned. In fact, Ramban famously in Bo, he says the reason that we have to go through all these rituals, you know, during Pesach and you know, so such details of it is because based on using the big events. In other words, Mitzrayim is a big event, right? That was like our introduction to God and those big miracles. But our relationship with God can't be sustained just by those big events. Think about our daily lives, you know, like. The sign of a good marriage is not that you had a great wedding. You know, the wedding is great and amazing and inspiring, but if you don't do things on a daily basis to strengthen that marriage, how long is the inspiration from that wedding day going to last? Maybe a week? Maybe a week after Shavuot Brachot? Like, it's the consistency of the relationship. You can't just base it on the big events. In fact, one of my favorite words is that the Gemara discusses, has a whole discussion about what the most important pasuk in the Torah is. Some say it's Shema Yisrael Hashem Elokeinu Hashem Echad. Some say Ve'ahavta Lo'recha Kamocha. You know what the discussion, the majority of people say, and they agree? It's the pasuk, most important pasuk in the Torah. Et ha'keves ha'chad ha'seh ba'boker, ve'et ha'keves ha'sheni ta'seh ben harbayim. Bring a daily sacrifice every day, in the morning and in the afternoon. Shacharit and mincha. Because that's about consistency. It's not the big things. It's not the romantic things. It's the everyday. There's a consistent relationship. And that's what our relationship with Hashem has to be. And says the Ramban, the more we talk about the big events, the more it'll inspire us to see Hashem in our everyday lives. Because of the big events. But it's a means to an end, not an end in and of itself. And that's the point of Pesach. It's recognizing Hashem in our everyday lives. Do we have 5 more minutes? I feel bad going over. We started late. I didn't start at 10, just for the record. So I'm an hour long shoot. I'm not going over so far. Okay, Nancy? Okay, good. So just a few more minutes just to finish this up. So Rav Hirsch, in source number 11, you know, so there's a whole discussion, well, why, you know, remember that Hashem took seven stars, so why Tefillin Shel Yad and Tefillin Shel Rosh? Why do we put it in the Tefillin? I don't even have a chance to discuss why that's just for men and not women, maybe another time. But if you want to ask me about it afterwards, I'm happy to talk. But women do have a mitzvah, a mezuzah. But says Rav Hirsch, Lo yadenu hi shegela atam mitzrayim, ki yad Hashem pula zot. And the reason it has to be put on your arm is because the remembrance that ki biyad chazakah, Hashem took us out with his arm, not ours. Meaning it's on your arm to show it's not your arm that was so strong that got you out. It was the arm of Hashem. And v'rak biyado hagdola hechzir lanu shuv et chozak yadenu. The only reason that we have strength back after that whole, you know, slavery, after 210 years of slavery, is because God gave us our strength back. So if we could remember how God gave us our strength back there, we can remember, you know, in our daily lives, who's the source of our strength. You know, it's like Moshe telling Bnei Israel in Devarim. You know, I always tell when I teach a Devarim class, actually Jordan's in the Devarim class, having a good time in that Devarim class, and I always tell the girls, there's not a lot of drama. You know, it's not exciting safer with a lot of stories, there's a lot of repetition, there's a lot of, you know, it's a Mishnah Torah, or it's a review of Torah, but I think that Dvarim is one of the most dramatic Svarim because of the setting, because of the backdrop. Moshe is like about to die. He's desperate for Bnei Israel to take ownership of Torah and for them to succeed this time into going into Eretz Israel, the second generation. And he's giving them over like the most important fundamental ideas about Judaism. Anything that you've heard of that's fundamental in Judaism comes from Dvar. You know, it's in Sefer Dvar. And that's what, you know, I call it Moshe's last lecture. It's like the professor, you know, that gave but it is. Like, he's dying and he's giving over in one last semester. Well, in Moshe had less time, it was like a month. You know, all the most important things to make sure they're going to succeed. So this is what he keeps reminding them. Remember when you go into Eretz Yisrael about the man. Remember how Hashem sustained you. He gave you food from heaven. And he keeps reminding them this while he's describing the beauties of the natural resources of Eretz Yisrael. Because he wants them to remember when you go into the land and there's going to be natural resources and you're going to be wealthy and you're going to build houses and you're going to accumulate wealth and there's going to be, you know, waterfalls. It's the same. It's still coming from Hashem. The same way that Hashem, you know, gave you food from heaven, he's giving you food there. It might not be through separate supernatural means. So if anything, the challenge is going to be greater for you to recognize Hashem once you go into Eretz Yisrael. You know, what's the difference between getting water miraculously from a rock because Moshe hit it and getting natural springs of water that come out of a mountain? Same thing. You know, both of them are miracles. One is within the laws of nature and one isn't. But it's the same thing. You know, when you see an oasis with natural fresh water coming out, that's a miracle. That's a natural miracle, but it's still a miracle. We have to recognize Hashem in our daily lives. And that's what the point of Pesach is. If you look at the Netziv in source number 12, he adds one piece. He said, Yad Chazakah. He says, it's interesting. He says different than others. He says, we're going to skip the first part, but he says basically the reason that we have to talk about, he says on Mitzrayim Kach Tziva Shehei Achar Sipor Shehu Bimota Pesach Be'orach, we have to talk about, you know, we always have the mitzvah of remembering Mitzrayim, but on Pesach we have to talk about it at length because we have to go into detail of everything Hashem did. And he adds one piece. He says Kibiyad Chazaka Begomer, the second underlined, he says Shalot Tzipalei Lama Tzrichu Hakadosh Baruch Hu Kol Kach Mitzvot V'Tachbulot L'Bitachon V'Emunah. Why does Hashem need, you know, it seems perplexing why he needs all these ways to remind us, like through the tefillin, through the mezuzah, like tachbulot, or like schemes. I love that word. You know, all these schemes. Yeah, you're going to walk into a room and you're going to see this little thing on the door that doesn't make sense, and you're going to boom, remember God. All these schemes to remind you to remember God. Why do we need that? He says Kibiyad Chazaka. Why? He says Hashem took you out with a strong hand. This is an interesting way. You could bring this up in your Seder also. Everyone assumes strong hand means, you know, Yad Chazaka, all the makos, the strong hand that he put upon the Mitzrim. Says the Netziv, it's the strong hand that he put upon you. He had to drag us out of there. It was Baal Karchenu. We didn't want to go. Again, back to the, you know, it's an unknown and scary. He had to push us out, Yad Chazaka. We don't think of Yad Chazaka applying to us. And that's why, you know, like the pull of our physical existence and not dedicating your life to God spiritually is strong. It's hard when we, you know, have to choose between the physical and the spiritual. And here it wasn't really that. I mean, they were leaving slavery, but again, the point of leaving Mitzrayim was not just to be free from slavery. They were changing. They were going from being Oved Avodah Paro to Oved Hashem. You know, at least when they were old, above and to Paro, they didn't have to work, they didn't have to dedicate their lives to Paro 24/7. It might have been, you know, 19/7. But I'm saying it's still not total that they're sleeping. They have their own time. You know, even when they're off from work, they're off. They don't have to be focused on Hashem. Being dedicated to Hashem, being over to Hashem is 24/7. I mean, God is in every aspect of our lives. There's no time off from God. So they had difficulty with that. And we see in our daily lives, it is hard. It's not an easy thing. So we need these things to remember. We have to remember that God had to drag them out of there, even though their existence was so miserable and hopefully more miserable than ours. But we still need those remembrances also. And that's why, you know, Rav Kook says, just to end with this point, and then I just want to come back to the Chameitz. He says very beautifully, which I'm not going to read. You could read through Rav Kook here because he says it so beautifully. He says that Pesach is not a single historical act that happened a long time ago, but it represents a task confronting us in every generation and every time period, which is choosing a spiritual life and choosing, even with all of the Mesiras Nefesh that goes into it. And there's Mesiras Nefesh. You know, thank God we're living at a time that the Mesiras, and in a country where the Mesiras Nefesh is not as great as it was in other places and other countries, and, you know, thank God right now. But the fact that everybody is sitting here at Shir, somebody in every single person here, someone in our families, you know, starting with you, did Mesiras Nefesh, you know, sacrifice something so that we could be here. And it is, there, you know, again, different levels and different extremes, but everybody has Mesiras Nefesh. And he says that's what Pesach represents. We have to remember, we're not just celebrating that we left a physical slavery. We're choosing to now be Ovdei Hashem. We're not just being freed like that, you know, Seder in Boston, you know, that we're freed from slavery and now we're free men. We're freed from slavery in order that we can choose to be Ovdei Hashem, which comes along with this whole new set of challenges, but hopefully, you know, L'tov Lanu, which Moshe keeps saying in Devarim, like it's for our best. It gives us a way to live a meaningful existence, which is ultimately what we want to do. So yes, there is Mesiras Nefesh involved, but hopefully it's worth it. So back to the lo yachal chametz. So remember that Hashem took us out of Mitzrayim ki biyad chazaka otzi Hashem et chem Mitzrayim lo yachal chametz. And that's why there's no room for chametz on this holiday. The rest of the year we can eat chametz. On Pesach there's no room for chametz. And I'm sure you've heard this in different settings, but I think it's very important to realize and to share that chametz really does represent the ego. You know, I just had a whole conversation with my 8-year-old daughter because, you know, they get all the shalachmanos Pesach time, Purim time, and then they do the big separation. What's chametz mamish and what's not chametz mamish? Because my husband, I grew up selling chametz mamish. My parents sold like challah in the freezer, you know? My husband didn't. So we don't sell chametz mamish. So they know that anything that's chametz mamish, they have to eat. But like the candy, the shahako stuff, that's not chametz, they could put away and sell and have after, you know. So when they were little, I used to tell them there's no difference, so they had to throw away the candy, but now they know. So she's asking me, so my youngest, she's the youngest, so the older siblings say, you really don't have to get rid of this from mommy's mouth. You know? So get away with it, you know, before they start educating the younger sibling. So so we had a whole conversation, so we're going through things in the house, of what's chametz mamish, what's not. So she says to me, so she gives me this bag of flour. She goes, Mommy, you have to use this up before Pesach, it's chametz mamish. I'm like, actually, it's not chametz mamish. What do you think matzah is made out of? And she's like, okay, but bread is also made out of it. And we had this whole discussion about how matzah and bread are made out of the same exact ingredients, except for yeast. Because, and yeast, by the way, is not chametz mamish. You can sell your yeast. It's the chemical reaction of the yeast with the water and the flour that that allows the bread to rise, which is what makes it chametz. So really, the only difference between chametz and matzah is a lot of hot air. Right? It makes sense. And that's what we call a person who's just so, you know, someone full of hot air, is someone who's so arrogant, they really don't have so much tochen, they poof themselves up to seem bigger, even though they're full of hot air. There's nothing there. It's just the air. So that's what chametz is. The rest of the year, it's fine. A healthy ego is important. We're not supposed to be shmatas. But Pesach, there's no room for even a tiny bit of chametz. Because by eating chametz Pesach, now you can understand, you have to remember that Hashem took you out biyad chazakah, below yachal chametz. If you eat chametz, you're going against that whole acknowledgement of everything comes from Hashem. We're celebrating on Pesach. We are here because of Hashem. Everything we have in our lives, we're sitting Baruch Hashem at a table with food, with nice cutlery, you know, even if you use plastic, you know, amazing things. I'm so sorry. Okay. Even the plastic is nice. And you're sitting with a family, with relatives, Baruch Hashem, and you have to remind yourselves and remember, everything I have here is because of Hashem. So as soon as we introduce the chametz, it's our way of saying, and us. It's from Hashem and us. And there's no room for that on Pesach. On Pesach, we're celebrating that relationship that Hashem has chosen us and reminding ourselves, of course, we have to put our own hishtaglos in, of course, but that's not what we're talking about Pesach time. Pesach time, we're totally looking at Hashem and saying, thank you, right? Thank you for bringing us to this point. Thank you for being the, you know, source of sustenance for us, physical sustenance, spiritual sustenance, because we would be nowhere without you. And that's what the relationship, that's what we're celebrating on Pesach. So have a chag kasher v'sameach and think about these things and share these things and realize that this is why you're putting all this hard work in. It's all about the relationship. Thank you for coming. Oh, you want to, I can take questions. You can come privately or, yeah. Sure. Wait, sorry, I can't hear. We just have a couple questions. Is that okay? Yeah.
What our definition of freedom is and freedom. Freedom doesn't mean free for all or without structure.
Correct.
And for us, that's what freedom is.
100%.
And the second thing is, when we started with the introductions, and there's a line in the introduction to Ramban, Adyam Shabbat on the Komanda El Ma'adat Avotan, when they, until the day that they go back to their place of origin, and wherever their fathers were at. So I thought to myself, well, this is very interesting. Well, didn't their forefathers come from Eretz Israel, the land of Israel? So in short, that in Judaism, unlike for the Jewish people as a nation, unlike other nations, the Torah and our relationship with God is real, takes a little bit of a higher place. That is our, instead of territory, that the that Eretz Israel is important, but it's the Torah that is most significant and better.